I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. There's more to the season than fruitcake and ugly sweaters. It's also party time. Today, Master of Wine Doug Frost and Room 39 owner Chef Ted Habiger are here. We'll ask them to share their secrets for throwing a holiday party you won't soon forget. With their expertise, we'll find some special recipes like shrimp ceviche with a twist and a hash unlike any you may have tried before. We haven't forgotten the wine, of course, and don't worry, I'll be sipping some just for you. And listen for a surprise libation brand new to the Kansas City area. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. You know, one reason I love the holidays around here is because I get to sit down with two of my favorite people and indulge in a little bit of good wine, some tasty treats, and some great conversation. We're going to talk about how to throw a memorable holiday party, and I don't know why we need our two guests because I'm a master at it myself. Doug Frost is one of our guests today, master of wine and master sommelier. Doug, always good to have you here. Happy holidays to you.
And back at you.
And so is Chef Ted Habiger. He's owner of Room 39 in Westport and now out in Leawood. And Ted, happy holidays to you, too.
Thanks for having me.
And our tasters today are two of KCUR's finest, Donald Vestal and Lisa Rodriguez. Thank you both for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Well, what's the most important single ingredient to any successful holiday party? Doug, let me start with you on this.
Friends. I mean, you know, honestly, it's people. Everything that matters, is people. I mean, my ideas about what people should bring to drink or have to drink is based upon what those people are going to want to drink, you know. And if it's soda, great. If it's flavored soda, great. If it's a cocktail or, you know, pre-batched cocktail or wine or beer, what have you, it just matters what your friends and family want to drink, you know.
That's such a pat state answer, Ted. Do you agree with friends, or are you going to go somewhere else here?
You know what? That I was like, I'm going to say people. And then he says people, of course.
Oh, yes,
you know,
of course.
It's the truth. I mean, it really is, getting together for any sort of holiday event. If it's family, I think that's great, too, even if you're not friends with your family, because then you really get to know each other better. And that's what the holidays are about, are just kind of celebrating life and enjoying yourself.
Donna, when you throw one of your memorable staff parties, the key ingredient for you is what?
Well, it's always wine.
Wine, yeah. There you go. That gets things going.
Well, it does. It helps me out to relax and, you know, loosen people up. And, you know, I am not the best cook, so I count on the wine to make the difference.
That covers up for all previous sins. Lisa, how about you?
I'm going to have to echo that. And I have to say I choose my holiday parties based on who I know is going to have the best wine and food. No, I'm kidding. It is all about the people, but the wine is a good way to get things started.
Well, Doug, you know, throwing one of these parties, this isn't cheap, right? This is something that needs a little forethought because you're going to invest some bucks.
Yeah, it's certainly true. I mean, because for me, you put out a breadth of flavors, if you will. And by that, I mean, like I said before, there are some people who are going to want to have non-alcoholic drinks. I myself always want to be able to drink a lot of water. As it gets cold, it gets dry, you need to replace that water. And every time you take, you know, you have a drink of wine or beer, what have you, you really ought to follow it with a drink of water. I mean, it's just the healthful thing to do. And so,
why is that?
Well, you're replacing the diuretic effect of alcohol is such that you're, you know, also going to dry yourself out. And that's one of the
Master of Wine says, the diuretic effect.
He's sounding a lot like my wife.
He's going upstairs here on us.
Well, it's just, you know, it's when people get hangovers most of the time, it's because they haven't had enough water. You know, it's like they haven't really had a balanced diet, if you will. All they did was throw some alcohol in their bodies and wonder why they feel bad. You know, you need food, as the Italians always say. They don't say that somebody's had too much to drink. They say, you know, non basta mangiare. They haven't had enough to eat, which makes so much sense. It's about, you know, balancing the food alcohol quotient properly. Mm-hmm. And I'd throw water in that mix as well. So, you know, you're just trying to make sure that you have different flavors. I always think that most people honestly, most people like sweet things. So to have a wine that has some residual sugar to it, whether it's a Moscato or many German Rieslings, not all, but many have some incipient sweetness. And I love that. I think that makes them delicious. I'd always have a wine like that around. Sparkling wine, like we have right now. We've got a little Italian bubbly here.
Yeah, what is this right here?
Well, it's not Prosecco. That's what I have to say about this wine. Yeah. I'm not done with Prosecco, but it's just like, it seems like all you see anymore when people offer you sparkling wine by the glass is Prosecco. This is an Italian sparkling wine from Trento, but it's not from the Prosecco region. And, to me, I think it's fun to experiment with sparkling wine. They make it all over the place. We make it in Missouri. Les Bourgeois makes a really nice sparkling wine.
You know, Ted, it seems to me, again, I'm no master of wine, but anytime you talk to people about wine and if it carries a little bit of sweetness to it, don't people tend to look down on it a little bit? I mean, isn't there a little bit of an image deal there?
Yeah, sure. I mean, and that's probably our fault in the restaurant business where we want the driest thing out there. And by dry, meaning that it's not very sweet,
Right.
It kind of cleans your palate and everything like that. But when, I hate to bring up Prosecco again, but Prosecco does have a touch of sweetness to it at times. And it's one of those things that you start out the day, you're getting ready to go out for dinner and everyone meets and has some salami and has a little bit of Prosecco or some other sparkling and get going.
Lisa Rodriguez, you're not hesitating to imbibe in that glass in front of you there.
You can pour more, Lisa.
You're going through it and I'm wondering what you think of it.
Oh, I love it. I hear Prosecco and of course I do think it has a little sweetness, and we did make clear this is not Prosecco, and I don't think that it's it's nice and dry. It's got a little, a little fruit to it as well, but not too much, and I like it.
Yeah,
no complaints here. I love the non-Prosecco.
Donna, your critique, which is what everyone's waiting for here, the final word.
Well, I love how crisp it is, actually. It feels crisp to me in a way that most sweet wines I don't necessarily get, or I don't know. Is that the right way to describe
it? No, I think
that?
that's a perfect way to put it. A sparkling wine like this has sort of a yeasty, biscuity flavor as well. And this Giulio Ferrari, I think it's a fun wine. Even though it's not champagne, it has some similarity.
What region is it from?
This is Trento in northern
Trento.
Italy.
Trento, okay. Mm-hmm.
Trento, oh, yes. I could have answered that. I could have told you that as well.
Let's
do this. Let's take a short break here to do some business for the station. When we come back, let's go back to my question, which you successfully dodged, which was payment, the cost of one of these parties and how to budget for one of these things and think about that. Yes, let's get back to that party right now. Welcome back, everybody. We're talking about how to throw a good holiday party with Chef Ted Haberger of Room 39, Master of Wine Doug Frost, Lisa Rodriguez, Donna Vestal, both from KCUR here. We're all having a good time, and I think at this point in the show, we probably should invite everyone listening in the greater Kansas City area to come on down to 4825 Troost and take part. This is such a nice time.
Let's get this party started.
Let's get it going, yeah. Let's go. What do we have coming up here next, Doug? You have a new glass of wine you're pouring folks here. What is it?
This is Brian Carter's Oriana. It's a blend of Viognier, Roussanne, and a little tiny bit of Riesling. It's Washington State. We went from Italy to Washington State, and indeed, this is just an aromatic, almost sort of floral white wine with a lot of density to it, kind of the opposite of what you would expect from the nose, because the nose smells kind of floral and pretty, and then you taste it and it has almost the weight of a Chardonnay. So it's kind of a wacky wine. I just think it's a fun wine. And back to your question, Steve, about how much it's supposed to cost.
Yes.
This wine's up in the 30s, and the sparkling wine we just had, that's close to that price as well. But in truth, you ought to be able to buy a nice bottle of wine for $10 or $12.
Mm-hmm.
And
you said that for a long time.
Yeah,
championed that cause. Yeah,
it's so funny because I go to sometimes these really nice meals where people are like, well, I don't know if I should have you choose the wine. You're probably going to pick something really expensive, and I always get my nose out of joint a little bit about that, because after everything I've studied and all the time I've spent in the business, if I can't find the cheap, great wine, what the heck is that information good for?
Right.
I mean, anybody can buy the expensive wine. It's finding that little gem, that's on a wine list for $32. That's really fun.
Well, where do you publicize those recommendations so that folks listening might be able to discover and fly off your coattails a little bit?
Well, certainly I still write for the Kansas City Star and try to put things in there, although I tend not to do quote-unquote reviews there. So, you know, I'm starting to put more reviews on my own website, which is just dougfrost.com. And, yeah. and with certainly with KCPT, we've been talking about doing a few more things as well. So trying to get the word out there. But in truth, with the Star, I like to write more of kind of a general column about a particular subject than just ticking off a bunch of reviews.
Like your trip to Cuba, which you did a few months ago. And you wrote about, and we're going to talk about that in just a few. Ted, you've just served up your first little tasty treat here. Tell us about it, because it was good.
Well, this is a just an appetizer I feel like you can do for a lot of parties. This is a KC shrimp ceviche.
Ah.
So I took there's a great little new company that's in Blue Springs that makes shrimp. Okay, so it's farm raised shrimp. It's delicious. It's super fresh. I just chopped it up, mixed it with lime juice, and then lots of local root vegetables. So I took turmeric, a little bit of local ginger, some kohlrabi, all from some from Prairie Birthday Farm, some from Crumbs Farm out in Bonner Springs, a little bit of orange, and some cilantro on top. That's the dish.
Voila.
Right? Oh, and it's on a little red pepper lavash there. That's what that is.
Yeah. Well, Lisa Rodriguez, Donna Vestal are, I think the word is eagerly taste sampling this new treat from Ted.
That was a polite way to put it.
Inhaling
it.
Yeah.
Maybe better. It really is delicious and super fresh. And it's what's nice that, you know, I take a bite, I enjoy all the flavors, and then they're gone. So that's why I immediately need to go back for another bite. It's really, really nice.
Donna?
Well, I do think I could actually make this from the way that you described it. So that's a big plus. So I think I'll try that. It's wonderful. Of course it is. I have a little bit different crackers because I'm gluten-free.
Yeah.
But it's good on it's great on there. And alone, even without the cracker. Really good. Yeah.
Doug Frost, anything else that folks might want to think about when it comes to getting a handle on some of the big cost drivers of any holiday party that might be coming up?
Yeah, I think probably the single most important thing when people are trying to figure out how it is that they would find good wines, you know, waiting for people like me to review a particular wine or trying to find a 98-point wine or what have you, I think is kind of silly. It's counterproductive because the most direct way to find good wine is to have a relationship with a retailer who knows what you like and that you can, you know, I mean, it's the old Cheers thing that they can, you know, you walk in the door and you can go, remember me, you sold me this, you sold me that. And they're like, yeah, what'd you like? Well, I like this better than that. And they're like, okay, let me show you this, this, and that.
Yeah.
It really is that, you know, retailers have hundreds, if not thousands of wines to choose from. And walking in the door saying, I need just this wine because, you know, Doug gave it a great review, I think it's just counterproductive when that retailer may or may not have the wine, but if they know your preference, then they can show you stuff that you will like. Now, you know, as I say, I feel the same way about the whole party idea that I need to have, you know, a wine that has some sweetness to it. I need to have some bubbly. I need to have a soft red. I need to have a big, powerful red wine, maybe a Chardonnay. And maybe one bottle of each is plenty. It just depends upon how many people are coming over.
Now, we've talked about this many times. Lisa, Donna, I'd be curious to get your take on this. But this notion that the wine industry writ large is just sort of shrouded in mystery. You know, consumers just don't know where to go, what to buy, how much to spend. The mystery seems to endure year after year.
Well, I know that's true, but I'm heartened by this idea that I could maybe talk to that retailer or someone about that $10 to $12 price range, because that's really what I want to focus on, but I feel guilty when I go into a wine store and I talk about that. So
yes.
I'm just very hesitant because I feel like if I'm going to talk to them for advice, I should buy a much more expensive bottle of wine, and that's just not practical. That doesn't get me through week to week.
Doug, your point is if Donna's not comfortable, maybe that's not a store she should shop in.
Yeah,
because she should be comfortable going into that store and having that conversation.
I really feel that way. And you know, it's interesting. Right now, the hot spot in terms of retail is $12 to $15 a bottle. That's where most everybody's spending their money. So if you walk in and say, I'd rather not spend anything over $15, but I'm looking for a red like this, a white like this, you know, I like this wine, that'll give them all the information they need. And if they don't, you know, jump at the chance to show you some fun stuff, then it's maybe time to find a different store.
Lisa, you've worked in the restaurant industry and have always been impressed. You seem to understand this at a level that I never will. But how do you navigate the whole business of buying wine?
I've developed, you know, what I know that I like. And I also tend to go to the same stores over and over again and buy from the same people. And so I always want to try something new. I never want to go and get the same bottle all the time because I know that's what I like. And I have fallen into that before. But like Doug said, having that connection with someone's like, hey, you know, I like this. Give me something new. Give me something that I've never had before. I've never heard of.
Okay, let's do this, guys. Let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about Doug Frost's trip to Cuba and other places where he's been. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. We're talking about good food and good drink for this holiday season. My guest today, Master of Wine, Master Sommelier Doug Frost, Room 39 chef and owner Ted Habiger, and the two folks who had the tough job of tasting here, KCUR's Lisa Rodriguez and Donna Vestal. We're also joined here by Keith Thompson, co-owner of Brewery Imperial, a new brewery that's just sprung up in town. Ted's a co-owner as well, and tell us about it, Ted.
Oh, gosh. This is a project that's been in the work for about almost 2 years. Well, in Keith's mind, for 10 years. But I joined it a couple years ago. We're at 19th and Oak, and it's a brewery and restaurant that will feature a live fire. We'll be cooking over fire there and lots of great beers.
Keith, how'd you get involved in a brewery of all things?
First, thanks for having me. But I've been brewing for a long time. Started in college at Free State and then came to Kansas City and worked at a few breweries here, and it just became one of those things where it was time to do something on my own. So
if Free State's on your resume, then you come highly recommended. I think
so,
that's pretty,
had
that's
a really
pretty
good.
Time there. Ted, you've served up your second dish here. It's got a raw egg sort of splashed over the top of it. Tell us about it.
This is a root vegetable hash. So there's everything from sweet potato in there. I've got a little Brussels sprouts, butternut squash, some mushrooms there's a guy in the West Bottoms that grows mushrooms and delivers them to restaurants.
You just know all these guys, don't
you? I know,
we
do,
right?
You know the guys, yeah. That's the best thing about my job, I think, is just those people that are these artisan producers that make all these different things.
That's great.
And then I just did a soft-boiled egg right on top.
Soft-boiled, not raw. My bad.
This is a dish that I get texts from my friends all the time about, oh, my God, I just had this. And this is like probably the number one thing that I've been hearing from people the last 2 weeks.
Lisa, I've never tasted hash like this before. Are you in the same boat as I am here?
It's delicious. I feel like with every bite, I taste something different in here. And I love any dish that has, as you so eloquently put, raw egg splashed on top of it.
Put an egg on it.
Put an egg on it.
Everybody's putting an egg on it these days.
Exactly.
You know?
I'm firmly in that camp.
Yeah. Donna, what do you think?
Well, I love eggs, so that's... But I'm not sure I could make this one. The presentation was so gorgeous on our plates. I know
incredible.
You all can't see it. It just looks as good as it tastes. So
it's very simple, really. I mean, it is just about vegetables and about cooking them to the right temperature.
Cooking them to the perfect place.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's easy. Yeah.
Doug Frost, you've had a chance to sample some Kolsch from Brewery Imperial. Tell me about it. What do you make of it?
Well, you know, the Kolsch style, it goes back to Köln or Cologne in Germany, and it's a kind of a sort of in-betweeny, if you will, because it's an ale, but it also gets lagered a little bit. And, you know, I think as a Kolsch style, you know, I don't pretend to be a beer expert whatsoever. I've spent my life around wine and spirits and cocktails, but I drink a lot of beer because it takes a lot of beer to enjoy wine, I think, ultimately, and really to read about it and stuff like that. And I think this is a good telling of the Kolsch style for sure.
Well, this is always, we've reached the point in the show when we do these holiday gatherings where your host has to sort of put the brakes on because he's having a great time and he has to do a presentation at the Greater Kansas City Chamber of Commerce at noon today. So we got to be a little bit careful here. You know, I was thinking a little bit about our conversation. Conversations about, you know, throwing a party. You know, the old standards when it comes to winter holiday gatherings are what, you know, Doug? I mean, what do you definitely need to have on hand if you're throwing a big holiday party?
Well, I think sparkling wine is always important. It just really gives that festive, you know, view. And you can make sparkling cocktails. You can use sparkling wine in cocktails in place of sparkling water. You can do all sorts of things. But at the end of the day, there need to be bubbles about. And it just makes people happy. It really does. And I certainly
You can really tell a difference. The bubbles pick up spirits, you're saying.
Yeah, they really do. You know, there's something probably primal about it. I'm not really sure why it should be so. It's not like the primal, you know, feeling you get from a fire. But the minute we hear that pop, if you will, the minute we see the bubbles coming up in the glass, the minute you get that funny texture, the you know, fizzy thing going on in your mouth, everybody just starts grinning. And so I think, you know, you need that. But I think that the idea is to have something that appeals to everybody. I try to have a cross section, whether I have, you know, light beers and heavy beers, and whether I have, you know, a punch sort of prepared, some kind of punch ready to go so I can give somebody a sweet or slightly sweet and spicy cocktail. And certainly red wine, white wine, something sweet, something dry.
You know, Ted, this notion that people's spirits pick up when a bottle is popped and the bubbles come out, have you noticed the same kinds of thing at your restaurants?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, there is something so celebratory about champagne or sparkling wine. I mean, it really is. You see our sales in December alone match all of our other sales for champagne for the rest of the year.
Really?
So, I mean, people really want to celebrate, and it's a good time to drink it.
Keith, why beer in your world as opposed to, you know, making wine out in California? How'd you get – why the interest in beer?
I think it's – for me, it's very sustainable as for me drinking it. Mm. I like to have a few, so it self-regulates. And the what I like about it is also how it crosses borders with wine sometimes. You're talking about bubbles and carbonation, you know, there's similarities there. I guess I get as excited when the cap comes off a bottle of beer as I do when a cork comes out of a bottle of sparkling.
You're very democratic that way, it sounds like. Yeah, I like that, yeah. You know, Doug, you've talked about buying wine as a gift, and you have offered us some very good advice in the past. First, you called wine a very practical gift. Why is that?
Well, because even if those people don't necessarily want that bottle, it's an easy thing to re-gift. Nobody hates being re-gifted a bottle of wine. I mean, it's like, really, you know?
Yeah.
And then my other advice, of course, as I think I've said before, if you can get a label that's in a foreign language, and if you can make sure it has some obscurity to it in some way, more mysterious, the harder to read, the better. That really makes people think you've spent a fortune.
Yeah.
It works.
Okay, and I promise when we come back from our next break, we're going to talk about Cuba. And welcome back one last time today. I'm Steve Kraske. We're getting some very practical advice today on holiday parties and holiday food and drink from Master of Wine Doug Frost, Chef Ted Habiger of Room 39, Lisa Rodriguez, Donna Vestal, both from KCUR with us here. Doug, I've been promising listeners we'd be turning to your trip to Cuba. You wrote about your trip to Havana, and you said this, and I love this line, Doug. Havana, you said, moves, but it thrums rather than throbs. What an interesting line. And you also wrote, I know of no city like it. Tell about a city that thrums rather than throbs.
Well, it just has this, you know, this rhythm to it.
Yeah.
And it, not surprisingly, that is... most cities sort of assault you. Most cities are so loud and noisy that they attack you. And this city instead seems to have its own rhythm that you can kind of jump into or not if you want to. It, you know, it's on the surface. And people are incredibly friendly, incredibly nice and welcoming to you. Even if it's a busy, loud city at times, nobody seems to hesitate to answer a question or help you out. As I said in the article, the only people that ever made me afraid were the bus drivers. Who do seem to want to just see if they can get that fly, if they can knock that fly off your shoulder,
yeah,
as they come by at 60 miles an hour. But everybody else is kind of taking their time and kind of chilling.
Lots of tourists when you were there?
Yeah, it's certainly a lot of European tourists. We're seeing increasing American tourists, but I didn't see much in the way of American tourists while I was there, mostly European.
Well, you got to tell us about the rum.
Oh, yeah, God. I really believe in Cuban rum as an article of, you know, one of those great styles, one of the standards, really. Rums are all different types. Rum is almost like saying, you know, booze, because there's so many different kinds. But Cuban rum was reinvented post-revolution, and it was taken, I think, the intention was to make great Cuban rum, as it always was. But I think, in effect, what happened was they made Cuban rum an older, more elaborate process and a more thrilling drink, because there's more layers to it, because there are older rums in it than there used to be. It used to be a relatively light style.
Yeah. You've poured one final glass of wine here for us this morning, and what can you say about it?
Well, I love Oregon Pinot Noir. This is Elk Cove. I love those guys. I think they make fantastic Pinot Noir. I know that Pinot Noir is still kind of in the headlines, even years after a silly movie was made about it. But I still drink this stuff, and I still like this stuff. It was kind of my first love when it comes to wine. And I think Elk Cove makes a delicious Pinot Noir.
We're following the Riesling here, so it's going to be drier, I'm guessing. Donna, tell us about your reaction to it.
Well, I'm definitely more of a white wine drinker, so it's fine, but it's not my love.
It's outside your comfort zone here a little
bit. Fine.
Yeah, okay. Lisa?
Oh, I love Pinot Noir, and I think this is a bottle that I could bring to a party and know that anyone there who drinks red wine is gonna love this wine. And I like it. I love the dryness to it, and I'm with Doug. I love an Oregon Pinot Noir. It's a place I'm comfortable trying new bottles within a same region.
Yeah. Ted, you just gave it a whirl here too. What do you think?
Oh, the way to my heart is through Pinot Noir, pretty much. It always has been. And
what do you like about it so much?
Well, you know, I often think of Pinot Noir as kind of the white wine of the red wines. You know, like it's, and I love, you know, something that always bothers me is if you go to somebody's house and they're like, "Well, I only drink red wine," and I'm like, "Oh my God, you only eat steak?" You know,
yeah.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
There's such a world out there that they're missing when they say that. And for me, you know, like, so as a result, I end up liking white wine more than anything else because everyone's kind of against it. You know, I'm a little bit of a rebel. I swear I am. I don't look like it, but then when it comes to Pinot Noir, you know, it's a little bit of that cross. You know, it's got the great acidity of white wine and all those kind of floral components, but then it also has like that kind of mushroomy and thick red tannin thing that can happen. Mm-hmm. You know,
and Danny seems to be intrigued
yes,
by your description of the wine.
How is the wine business just in general these days, Doug? What are we seeing as we continue to pick? The economy picks up and people are maybe feeling a little better about things.
Increased growth. It has stalled a little bit over the last couple of years, but we're seeing some upticks again. The main driver really in the wine business has been if the numbers aren't the volume numbers aren't going up precipitously, and they're not. They've kind of stalled out at that. People are spending more money on wine, so the dollars continue to go up at a pretty good pace. And as I say, I mean, even if you go back 5 years ago to when we were in the midst of the long recession or near the end of it, I guess, people were looking at $10 to $12 bottles of wine at most. Now it's that $12 to $15 price point. And that doesn't sound like a big change, but you take that times the millions of bottles that people are buying, and it really has a big impact on the industry.
Is there one wine that's sort of a hot product right now? Is something in vogue, maybe more so than the last recent years?
Actually, interestingly, no. I mean, this is, I think, the most interesting part about the wine business is where once upon a time we talked about Pinot Noir being the hot thing or Pinot Grigio being the hot thing. Even, you know, Chardonnay going back 10 years ago, it's still the number one white wine out there. What has happened is that people are parcelating their interests, just like we see in any other industry. And I think it's increased information that we have available to us. People are able to experiment more. So whereas, 10 years ago, there were six or eight grapes that mattered. Now people will try Albarino or Grüne-Veltliner, or they'll try a dry Riesling from Australia. There's just a million different options out there, and people actually pursue them. So that's the great change. If there's a single category that's doing well, it's the red blend. It's the idea that people will just put different grapes together and say, this is a nice blend, much like that white blend that we had at the outset.
What are people asking for in the restaurant these days, Ted?
Well, you know, I have to agree. It's completely changing, you know, and we did go through this period for the last couple years where craft cocktails were what everybody wanted, and I saw cocktail sales just go through the roof, and wine has made a comeback in the last 6 months, and it's great to see, and people want to try different grape varieties.
Yeah. Sounds good. Folks, we're out of time. I want to thank Doug Frost again for coming in. Doug, it's always happy times when you're here. So always good to hear you.
Thank you so much, Steve, and happy holidays to you.
You bet. Ted Habiger from Room 39. Ted, thanks very much. Lisa Rodriguez, Donna Vestal, thank you.
Thanks.
And just a quick note, we had help this week from KCUR's Linda Scher, Chris Pruitt, Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Coy Duggar, and Ryan Hennessy. Our senior producer is Steven Steigman. Before we go, a toast to our supporters. Keep that support coming, folks.